Hi, Anna. Thank you so much for agreeing to speak with us today. And I guess I would like to start at the beginning with how you and John met and what his interests were at the time in terms of his work.
We met in 1982, Christmas, December 27th, I mean December 17th, at a friend Bill Niemer's house. At a party. I was in graduate school at the time and I went over to Bill's house. And Bill Niemer taught with me at Austin High. He was a writing consultant and I was a math teacher. And I was in graduate school to get my master's degree in the School of Social Work. And I was taking a final and I went to Bill's party at 9 o'clock after final. And John and other colleagues were there. And John had gone to graduate school at Hopkins with Bill Niemer and Evan Carton. Was at the party and he had gone to graduate school as well with John. And Evan's wife, Janice, and a lot of other academics were there. Liz Butler Cullingford and Alan Freeman were there. And I met all of them at the party and immediately started talking to John. And I immediately started liking him and he immediately started liking me. And we sat next to each other and we were talking about teaching and our love of teaching, both of us. And how much teaching is really about love. It's accepting, it's already assuming that the people you're teaching already are whole people and they already are beautiful people who don't really need to be fixed, and just accepting them as whole people to start with, and then moving from that relationship forward instead of thinking that they're lacking something. We both believed in that, and it was really unique to discover that, even though I taught math and he taught English. And so that was so. Right after that, I called Bill Niemer the next morning after talking to him till 1 in the morning and said, I really like your friend John. And Bill said, well, you know, Bill's being very, he's kind of a Victorian bachelor. He's like, well, you know, let's give some time and I'll talk to John. He didn't give me his number. That very night, John saw Bill at another party, and John said, what is Anna's number? I'm gonna call her right away. And Bill said, I give up. So John called me, and I went dinner over there, and it was really nice. I had dinner with John, he cooked dinner for me, and we just fell in love right away. And we knew we were just meant to be together, and we just hung out all the time, and then we got married the next year.
Oh, wow.
About a year, year and 3 months later.
Okay. And at what point did his interest turn towards technology?
At about the time we got married, which was in 1984, March 17, 1984, he was already using word processing and a computer. He had written his dissertation, of course, typed it, and then he had written part of his book manuscript, he had typed it, but then he converted it into a WordPerfect, I think was the software then, and started using word processing. But he really got interested in computers. He really liked computers and learned a lot about the word processing and the applications, and then got interested in just the capabilities of the computer in general. I was really interested in kind of the social aspects of computing and went to a conference called CSCW, Computer Supported Collaborative or Cooperative Work. And it was the first one, I think. It was in Austin at MCC. And I went to this conference and I had seen this presentation about hypertext. So I came back and I went, John, there was this presentation about this linked process and approach. And I didn't understand it that well, but I read it to John. And he became really interested and so emailed. From that, there was a call for papers to MIT on using hypertext. So he put in to give a talk at MIT on hypertext because he immediately wrote an essay like, this will change everything. And that's how he wrote this paper on hypertext. And so he got accepted, so we went to MIT. And the conference at MIT that year was also simultaneously the same time when Apple launched its hypertext software program. What was it called? It was a name. HyperCard.
Okay.
HyperCard. we didn't know that because it was this conference at MIT at the same time in Cambridge where they were having the big conference, Macworld or big conference for Apple computer at the same time. And they were running it. It turns out that the interest in hypertext was coincident, was deliberately timed along with the release of HyperCard. So we found out about it that same week, the same day that John gave the paper was when HyperCard got released. And so it became a really big deal, and John started investigating that. He was really good with technology right away. He could remember things, he knew how to learn things. He had some of the visual problems he had, got worse later, but he always had to adapt the way he used technology. And pretty quickly got a voice card with his computer, the voice program, so he could type in it and have it read back to him to use the computer. But he loved computing from the day one. And he understood applications, and he just could learn new things on it much more easily. Then he became kind of an expert in the English department on computers. And everybody looked to him to help them use computers more and more. And then he got interested in the lab. And somebody had already had a computer lab set up, Jerry Bum. And then John became the next director after Jerry left. I've gone through a lot of years.
I
started in 1984, the year we got married, and then this all unfolded over several more years. I don't have exact dates. You guys do.
That's understandable, and I guess related to that, so John was a full-time professor, the head of the Accessibility Institute.
Not at the time, because they didn't have that. Then he was a full-time professor, then he became the head of the lab, computers...
CWRL,
Writing and Research Lab. And after that, he got called by the provost to start the Institute for Technology and Learning, working directly for the provost. And he did that. And then he morphed that into the Accessibility Institute because that was more what he was interested in. They were doing a project with public schools, and then they morphed it into the Accessibility Institute because I think some of the schools were having trouble buying technology, and there were some issues with that. So he really worked a lot with developing projects with the schools, and that worked out well. Then he wanted to focus more on accessibility because he himself was going through a lot of issues with accessibility. And then he got on the World Wide Web Consortium, and so all of that thing that kind of unfolded over like a really lot of years, like a 20-year period.
So he was a very busy guy, correct?
Yeah, he was a very busy guy because he had to, like, when he was a director of the Institute of Technology and Learning and then the Accessibility Institute. So he had to do everything, you know, with those programs and work with all the different departments because this was beyond the English department, beyond the College of Liberal Arts. It was working for the whole university. So he worked a lot with internal accessibility within UT, working with the webmasters and people, and also working with external entities and research all over the world and W3C. And he really loved his collaboration on W3C.
So how did that impact your lives together that, you know, he was trying to do so many different things?
Well, he was always interested in new things, and so was I. So we really had a great partnership. And he would always be involved and interested in everything I was doing and all my friends and all my colleagues and all my customers, because I'm an independent consultant. I work, have a small business of called Interaction Design, and I work with designing training experiences for companies that are very interactive with people collaborating. So both of us have always been interested in collaboration. So we talked about it a lot. Everything I was doing, we talked about. Everything he was doing, we talked about. So I went with him on some conferences. In fact, even while he was sick, he had leukemia. He was in remission, though. We went to Spain, Asturias, to a conference, and he was one of the keynote speakers. And that was the fall after before his bone marrow transplant, after his first chemo, around Thanksgiving time. And he shared everything with me, and so I would meet his friends. In fact, in the early days in the computer lab, we always had a huge party over here mm-hmm. every semester. Mm-hmm. And just brought everybody over, and just a whole big party, and we served a whole dinner, and people, we had seating for everybody, and tables set up, and fun. We sat and talked for hours, and I met a lot of his graduate students, and I like to go to conferences with him. He sometimes went to conferences with me as well. And so we just made our work life part of our personal life, and our mm-hmm. personal life part of our work life. I even collaborated with him in designing some training that got used in the lab, and then later with the institute, and then doing some work for groups at the university, and also from Nobility, which is an accessibility company here mm-hmm. in Austin, nonprofit, Sharon Rush. I helped John put together some materials that they use, and I just volunteered my knowledge as a designer of interactive experiences to help him, and he helped me, his moral support with me, and also just talk through ideas. So, and all my customers and clients who met him loved him, and people yeah. that I met in his group were nice to me and really liked me. So I think it's just more, we didn't have boundaries about who we were going out just with socially versus yeah. our work colleagues. Mm-hmm. We would go out and have drinks and do things, out to eat with, or have dinner parties, and at the dinner parties we'd have people in university and in other aspects of accessibility.
Okay.
Like Jim Allen, Jim Thatcher, Sharon Rush. Peg Syverson is a really close friend of ours personally, so we hung out a lot. We had dinners, just the three of us, a whole lot of the time. Uh-huh. The whole time she's been here. And her son we knew,
yeah.
and our kids know them. And so we just were really very open and incorporated our work life into our personal life a lot.
Yeah. Since this issue is about how John impacted his graduate students, I wonder if you can give us any insight on how you thought of him as a teacher or how he thought of himself as a teacher.
I think John's basic assumptions were that he really respected students and their knowledge and was really impressed and took them really seriously. And in fact, sometimes that's a problem because if they started saying they wanted to do something or came up with ideas, he took it really seriously. And he just treated them like they were an expert. Maybe expected too much sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because he just really, wow, that's a cool idea, follow that. And, you know, and then really wanted them to develop the idea and took it seriously. Mm-hmm. So he was never, I don't think, paternalistic, like, I'm going to take care of you, or like, you know, you don't know that much, but, you know, I'm your, like, father figure. I don't think he treated people like that. Mm-hmm. I think he treated everybody as a peer intellectually. And that could have been, you know, a little bit challenging or, like, to some students. I think he was really good with students who were really self-confident and students who were fascinated with ideas and were comfortable and confident in the ability to discuss and even argue with other intellectuals. Mm-hmm. That would be really, John would be a great teacher. Was a great teacher for that, but folks who really wanted to be nurtured a lot or wanted hand-holding or like mm-hmm. want a lot of structure, mm-hmm. you know, like constantly like kind of was like a mother hen type teacher, he wasn't good at, because he treated them like colleagues, you know, yeah. expected them to be adults and just, does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, it does.
And so, but I think I prefer his point of view because I think he deeply respected them as complete, full human beings that were completely, you know, equal to him. He was really humble. He didn't brag about anything. In fact, we had a dance group that we were in, and there were people all ages, and he was in that group, and people didn't know who he was or that he taught. They just thought, some people probably thought he was a blind guy that with no job. I mean, that's...
Yeah, yeah.
And that he would never say, well, do you know that I'm a professor? Or they didn't even know he was a professor at all. There were people who did know, and so he would, if he just met someone, he was just sitting in the lobby at UT somewhere, he wouldn't even say, I'm a professor. He just wouldn't volunteer a lot of information about himself unless you asked. Mm-hmm. And he was very, very, he rode the buses a lot throughout the whole time, you know, he was in Austin. And people on the bus, he would just get to know really poor people who would get on the bus, and they just knew him as John, and they liked him, they liked Dylan, his dog.
Uh-huh.
And they just treated him like John, and they didn't know that he was a UT professor.
Yeah.
And he was always like that the whole time. I was married to him. almost 25 years.
Excellent. I also wonder if you have any thoughts about how his graduate students impacted him. If the journal this year will be about how he impacted them, but I wonder if you have any.
I would say there, and I'm embarrassed that I don't know everybody's names. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot of people who, say, in the accessibility world, who went on beyond their classes and just did fascinating things, and worked in companies and written great things. And he really respected all of those people, and called on them even in his work at W3C. They had jobs and they were doing things, and he would call them like, I really need your help, and I want to learn from you. So I think he was open to learning from everybody, mm-hmm. and he respected his students and felt really happy that they were well placed and they were doing good things and they were influencing ideas. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how brilliant certain people were, and this is a brilliant essay. This person's doing this really great stuff, and he was really, really, really proud of all the students and happy to know them, mm-hmm. Even after they graduated and went on to other things. He stayed in touch with a lot of people. He emailed a lot of people. So he's my role model for respect, intellectualism, sweetness, humor. I mean, he just has so many great qualities. Mm-hmm. So many great qualities.
Okay, well, thank you so much for speaking with us and, speaking about your life with John. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing this, everybody.
No problem.